The nature of public forest management changed radically in our part of the country a few decades ago. There were really many reasons for the change, but the northern spotted owl, like the proverbial canary in the coal mine, became the most visible symbol of the change. It is listed as threatened on the endangered species list. A lot of land has been set aside or otherwise protected from intensive logging, so the spotted owl could have a place to live. Still, the owl's numbers have kept dropping. Human and habitat challenges aside, the barred owl moved into the spotted owl's range, competing with it for resources. So the barred owl removal experiment was created to shoot barred owls in the hope of easing some pressure on spotted owls. Two of the major figures in the work are with us. Paul Henson is the state supervisor of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Oregon office. Thank you for joining us, Paul.
Thank you for having me.
J. David Weens is with us as well, supervisory research biologist at the Rangeland Ecosystem Science Center for the U.S. Geological Survey, USGS. David, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sure. One of you, if you can just give us the general stuff first about where the barred owl came from.
Yeah, I guess I could answer that one. The barred owl is actually a native species to eastern North America.
Mm-hmm.
And around the turn of the century, early 1900s, the barred owl began a range expansion, pretty substantial, westward. And over the next 80 years or so, they gradually moved west, at which point it hit the west coast and expanding into the range of northern spotted owls.
So, David, I mean, how did it get through some of the natural barriers like the Rocky Mountains?
Well, there's a couple of hypotheses about that. I think the main one is that they got a foothold along with the European settlement of the Great Plains region in particular. As settlers were moving through those regions, you know, they were planting tree shelters around their houses and things. And one of the thoughts is that these tree shelters gave barred owls kind of stepping stones to move across those natural barriers. And so if you look at that hypothesis, it's got a human-caused component to it of the range expansion of barred owls.
So, Paul Henson, is it possible that by the time we started dealing with the spotted owl and getting it on the endangered species list, that the barred owl had already begun to move into its territory?
Yeah, that's possible. There's probably in the northern part of the range in Washington State, for example, there was already some barred owls, I think, during that period that had been spotted by the 1980s. But they certainly weren't in high enough numbers to be having the kind of impact that they're having now on spotted owls. And, of course, now they've been recognized to be expanding down the coast and the Cascades into the Sierra Nevada of California and the coast ranges of California. So the expansion that David just described is continuing, and folks, while we're sort of dealing with a population of barred owls that's been here now for a number of years and exerting influence on the northern spotted owl, the concern is now also shifting down into California as it impacts the California spotted owl potentially down there. So it's that sort of westward and now southern movement of the barred owl is continuing.
It sounds like a very opportunistic creature, Paul.
Yeah, they're as David has learned and his colleagues by studying the animal in some detail, they're much more of a generalist feeder than say spotted owl. So they can and they're much more productive in terms of reproduction and numbers. So they can kind of overwhelm, just in sheer numbers, spotted owls in terms of their territory size and usage.
Does the barred owl require old growth then, like the spotted owl? I mean, a friend actually snapped a picture of a tree sitting in her yard in a residential neighborhood in Ashland, and I said, that's a barred owl.
Right. Yeah. Well, they do overlap pretty significantly. I'll let David answer that, but I will suggest that, your odds of seeing a barred owl, for example, in other kinds of habitat, including even in, sort of suburban or rural urban areas is higher than necessarily seeing a spotted owl. But David would have more insight into that.
Yeah, David, so talk about that. Where do we generally find barred owls? It sounds like there are not many places we don't.
Well, barred owls actually, like spotted owls, they do prefer older forest types. They like the forest with really tall, older trees. But because they're generalist species, like Paul just mentioned, they can also do okay with kind of suboptimal forest conditions. And so oftentimes you'll see barred owls moving into places like Ashland or downtown Portland even, because, you know, there's sufficient spot of trees there is all they need, really. Even though that's not ideal for them, another issue is that all the ideal places in a lot of areas have now filled up with barred owls in the older forests. And so because they're so strongly territorial, not only against spotted owls, but also their own species, those spaces are kind of taken. And so the others are resorted to taking these suboptimal habitats as their populations continue to expand. So they're quite a general species, very versatile in that sense.
When you talk about them being strongly territorial, do they repulse invaders? Is that what that means? Is that how that gets expressed in behavior?
Yeah, like a lot of raptor species, once they pair and establish a territory, they'll defend that area and their food resources and nest area resources pretty rigorously. And barred owls are known to be pretty fiercely territorial, and so they'll chase out other species, other owl species in particular, that they think might be a threat or trying to impinge on their resources in those areas.
We're talking about barred owls and their effect on spotted owls, and that includes the introduction of the barred owl removal experiment, several years old now and a couple more years to run. J. David Weens is with the U.S. Geological Survey, USGS. Paul Henson is the state supervisor of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Oregon office. You can join the conversation on the exchange. Many questions, comments likely about what we're talking about here. 800-838-3760 by phone. You can send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Paul, how did the whole barred owl removal experiment come to fruition? How did it come to be?
Well, the impact that barred owls were having on spotted owls was beginning to be recognized significantly about 10 years ago, as we were also redoing the spotted owl recovery plan, which we completed in 2012. We identified essentially two things that need to happen for spotted owl recovery. One is continue to conserve the habitat that spotted owls prefer, and the Northwest Forest Plan has done a very good job at that over the last 20 years or so, as you mentioned in your introduction. But at the same time, figure out some way potentially of managing the barred owl to reduce its impact on spotted owl populations. So this is sort of the two-legged stool here, so to speak, for spotted owl conservation, is conserve the habitat and manage the barred owl. So we developed ideas for experimental removal, because some folks on private timberland had done some preliminary removals down in Northern California on Green Diamond Timber Company land, where they were removing some barred owls in a very small experiment, and it seemed to work in that spotted owls would come back to those territories that they had either been suppressed or removed from by barred owls. And so we developed a stakeholder group, knowing that, you know, any of these kinds of one species versus another, where you need to intervene and potentially either capture and remove or lethally remove one species to help another is controversial from all kinds of things, especially from the ethical perspective. There's scientific challenges, but there's also ethical challenges. So we convened a stakeholder group that included a wide spectrum of interested parties, including some animal rights folks, you know, bird conservationists, as well as land managers and scientists, and developed essentially this experiment. And we knew we had to, before we would just rush headlong into any kind of management positions, we really wanted to test some options and also give the public a chance to weigh in on those options with us. And so that's really how we started this process back about 6 or 7 years ago, and pulled together this experiment, and then asked USGS and David and some of his colleagues to help us out, bring a good scientific emphasis to it, but also a good and sensitive ethical and social approach to it as well. And that's where we find ourselves now, a few years later, getting close to completing this experiment, and then we'll have to reach the point of making a decision about whether to implement an actual management strategy or not, which we've not done yet.
All right, so this is not the actual management strategy. This is just to see what the results are of the taking of the barred owls.
Yeah, that's right, and to see if you could, if it'd be worth doing on a kind of a larger landscape level, across the three states of the range of the northern spotted owl in the U.S., whether or not it'd be worth doing or if it's even logistically feasible to do and have the impact. No one wants to go and, you know, remove any animals if it's not going to have the effect you want. So we decided to do this experiment to see if, in fact, we could do that. And by the way, I just want to, maybe put this in a broader perspective. I know there's continues to be a fair amount of concern about any time you sort of have to lethally remove any animal in order to help other animals. There's always an ethical concern, and this form of wildlife management has been going on and probably will need to go on, in perpetuity with all kinds of species. And they're always extremely difficult choices. And we sort of referred to this one as a bit of a Sophie's choice. Do you shoot some barred owls and remove them, or do you let a species go extinct? And that's really the choice. And we see that in other forms of wildlife management as well.
So, David, within the community of wildlife biologists, how fierce a debate was there about taking this approach?
Well, I think in the scientific community, there's a pretty obvious decision to move forward with the experimental approach. There had already been a preponderance of evidence that barred owls were having a very strong and negative impact on spotted owls and their habitats, potentially also the prey species that spotted owls rely on. And so from a scientific standpoint, it really was that, you know, if we just kind of stood back and let the chips fall up where they may, we would likely lose the spotted owl throughout much of its range, if not all of its range. And so, really, from a scientific perspective, I think the best approach was what the Fish and Wildlife Service determined is to do a carefully controlled experiment first to work out all the details of attempting to manage barred owls to see if that's actually a beneficial approach to spotted owls. I'll also mention that when we began the experiment, barred owls were already well established, and so they were very numerous in the forest at very high densities. And spotted owls had been decimated to pretty low levels at that point. And so it really became a choice of really letting things slide further or doing a controlled experiment to determine if manipulating barred owls could make a difference for spotted owls and perhaps other species as well.
So, Paul, have there been just very specific zones where you've been doing the shooting of the barred owls? I mean, is it limited in space?
Yeah, that's right. There's four study areas, four spread throughout Washington, Oregon, and Northern California. And each of those four study areas is essentially divided in half into what's called a treatment and control. So in a very basic scientific approach, you sort of take an area and you cut it in half and you treat one half with the experiment, which essentially is the removal that David's described. And the other half, you just watch, and that's your control. And that's where you don't do anything except collect data on, and then you compare the treatment and the control to see. So you have sort of a before and after kind of impact, and you also have a treatment and control impact. And so we have an area up in northern Washington. We've got an area in the Oregon Coast Range, and we've got areas down in California, northern California, that we're testing. And we've got participation down in northern California from the Hoopa tribe on their lands.
We're talking about spotted owls, barred owls, and the barred owl removal project. 6 years and counting, and about 2 years left to go, it sounds like. Paul Henson is with U.S. Fish and Wildlife in the Oregon office, is the supervisor there. And J. David Weens is with the U.S. Geological Survey, where he's a supervisor research biologist in the Forest and Rangeland Ecosystem Science Center. Questions, comments, welcome on the Jefferson Exchange. Join us as we talk about some of the intricacies of trying to manage for spotted owl survival, but at the expense of barred owls. 800-838-3760 is our phone number. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Connie in Eugene. Welcome to the Exchange.
Good morning, gentlemen. I appreciate your work. My question is, I've heard from other bird persons and as well as read that there's been interbreeding between the barred owl and spotted owl. And I wondered if you encountered that in your research areas, and also how does that impact survival of a species if the dominant owl is interbreeding with the lesser owl.
Okay, great question, Connie. I do remember this, David, from years ago about a hybrid showing up, but have there been many more?
Actually, the hybrids, or the sparred owls, as people call them, are a mix between sparred owls and barred owls. We're much more common as barred owls began invading the northern spotted owls range, and there weren't that many of them, and they were mating with spotted owls at that point. We've seen that the occurrence of hybrids greatly diminished, at least in Oregon and Washington, as barred owls become far more numerous than spotted owls. So we do see hybrids still. I think we have maybe one known hybrid in each of our study areas in Oregon and Washington, but there aren't many.
Okay, so not much of the interbreeding going on.
Yeah, they're seeing a lot more hybridization going on in California now, as barred owls particularly move into the Sierra Nevada range down there, where there's still a good, healthy population of spotted owls. And so there's quite a lot of hybridization going on down there. But we're not seeing it so much in the northern part of the spotted owls range at this point.
So, Paul Henson, over the 6 years now of the barred owl removal experiment, how many barred owls taken, and what have you learned, and what is still a mystery?
My best estimate at this point, David, would be able to be more precise with up-to-date information, but about 2,500 or so barred owls have been removed. In some areas, the experiment's showing that you can reduce barred owl populations overall, but it would take a fair amount of regular effort. And in some areas, it looks like spotted owls might be responding positively, but the response has not been in terms of positive response from spotted owls recovering or returning and breeding successfully, has not been overwhelming. And that's partly why we added a year or two of additional treatment to see if it takes a little more effort to get a response from spotted owls. But that question, I think, best would go to David.
Okay, go ahead, David.
At this point, in the areas where we have been removing those barred owls, we are seeing that the spotted owls that were there when we began the experiment are remaining there. And so we're able to maintain those populations in the areas where barred owls are being removed. We also have the control areas where we're monitoring both species without doing removals to see what's going on without removals. And in those landscapes, spotted owls continue to vanish very rapidly. And so even though we're not seeing a lot of new spotted owls come into our areas with removals, we are seeing that those removals are helping to maintain the spotted owls in the landscape. Whereas if you're not doing removals, spotted owls continue to disappear quite rapidly, and barred owls continue to increase in their population size to very, very high densities.
Overall, is the population of the spotted owl still seen as dropping?
Yes, I think our last big analysis, which was 5 years ago now, and we're about to update that in this January, where there's a large demographic analysis of spotted owls to determine their status and population trends. And that last analysis that was done in 2014 showed that the range-wide population was declining at about 3.8% per year, which doesn't sound like a lot, but for each year that goes by, the whole population has declined by over 4%, about 4%, and that's pretty substantial, actually. And, of course, in the northern part of the range, that decline was even sharper. And we've seen since then those declines steepen and accelerate, actually, in many of these areas. And that's largely attributed to the presence of barred owls in their expanding population.
Well, I am the amateur in this discussion, Paul, but it seems like you have a roadmap, certainly, for a management strategy once the experiment is over. What needs to happen in the next 2 years to help that management strategy, if there is one, firm up?
Well, a couple things, and most important is that we have a very clear and positive expectation that we'll get results from implementing some management strategy. We'll get results that will help the spotted owl significantly. This is not cheap doing this work. It's you got to have folks out in the field, And part of this experiment was actually exploring, you know, how you can do this efficiently and try and do it with, you know, as reduced cost as possible while covering the largest area. These are, you know, some pretty rugged areas across a fairly large geography. And the other thing is getting, the public, to understand the trade-offs here and why this would be worthwhile to go forward. And it really is kind of that trade-off between, you know, having to remove some animals. And the barred owl is a beautiful, you know, amazing animal in its own right and has, you know, has certain rights as we know. And but at the same time, sitting back and watching a species go extinct is not an option really for us, certainly, and including under the law, under the Endangered Species Act. You know, one other thing I'll mention in this context, too, is this discussion is sometimes often framed as an owl versus owl sort of, you know, conflict. And why not let the barred owl, you know, let nature take its course and the barred owl, you know, can gradually push out the spotted owl and you'll still have a, you know, a medium to large size owl in the woods. But the, as David alluded to with the barred owl's, you know, choice of prey and fecundity, it's so reproductively effective. They will they're affecting other bird species in the forest, other owls, not just spotted owls. They're also affecting the prey base for lots of other animals. And so when you deal with invasive species, you're looking at widespread impacts, not just to the spotted owl. The spotted owl is sort of the canary in the coal mine here, but there's a lot of other potential impacts that justify moving forward.
All right, using that term invasive species helps a lot, might help people understand a bit better what's going on here. The spotted owl removal experiment, 6 years in progress, got 2 years left to run. Paul Henson is the state supervisor at the Oregon, or the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Oregon office. J. David Weens is at the U.S. Geological Survey. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.